Hi, I'm your host, Andrew Sanders.
And hi, I'm your co-host, Flo Labrado.
Welcome to Different at Work, where we talk about how we get to be different at work. Here we discuss navigating the modern workplace and cultivating professional relationships while being wired a little differently.
We're here to help people in their journey of becoming themselves fully by pairing informative science, theories, and practices with practical lived experience context, using the strengths that come with how our brains work. And today, we're going to dig into what happens when someone is diagnosed with ADHD or another neurodivergence in adulthood. And I imagine it's like putting on a new lens through which to reframe and almost like develop a new understanding of previous experiences. And, you know, we often hear about ADHD in children and the challenges during the school years, but what happens when you don't know about your neurospiciness until you're an adult?
I can definitely relate to that. So I was diagnosed with ADHD a year and a half, almost 2 years ago. And ADHD was not even on my radar or on the bingo card, as kids like to say. I kind of had this stereotype of ADHD or ADD in my head, which was kind of stuck there from the 80s. You know, ADD used to be, the stereotype was anyway, like the bratty kids that can't sit still and they need the Ritalin, right? So that stereotype had stuck with me all these years. And I wasn't the bratty kid that couldn't sit still. If anything, it was my mind that was overactive. I didn't have like the discipline issues and I wasn't on Ritalin and all of that. So when I got the diagnosis, it was more of a shock than a surprise, because I knew something was up with, you know, not being able to finish paragraphs and like I'm doing now, telling three stories in one response.
Well, I'm curious though, like if we could go back to before you knew about your ADHD, how did you interpret your experience at work or even at school?
That's a great question. So I think that I did a lot of overcompensating. So looking back now in retrospect, I can say, yeah, hindsight, I was masking and overcompensating. But back then, before I had the benefit of the knowledge that I have now, it was just interpreted as stress. Like sometimes it came out as dread. If I got bored and at work, it just, everything was just like working on something that I'm not interested in, everything just gets kind of like gray and dark and it really sucks. It really sucks. Mm. So now's probably a good point to mention that ADHD, the whole crux of ADHD is that it is, my brain is wired to respond to novelty, right? More than anything else. So I need to be under pressure or interested in something in order for my brain to actually release the chemicals it needs to be able to plan and function correctly. Neurotypical people, so if you're an ADHD manager, you probably already know this, but if you're managing people, it's helpful to know this. But neurotypical people, your brain already makes those chemicals. So you can plan out more easily. Like, I've got this project I can do, you know, this step here, this step coming the following week and whatnot. But I didn't have that. So everything was either last minute or had to be a fire drill or high priority, or I had to be worried about letting someone down, or RSD is another huge component of the ADHD. So, oh my gosh, you know, I got to get this right or they're going to criticize me for it. Right.
Well, interesting too, because our brains like stories. And so we all have a story that we construct to understand what's happening. And so I'm curious, before you knew about your ADHD, what was the story that you had about yourself, about those things like needing the pressure and the experience of RSD before knowing what it was?
I just thought I was a perfectionist. So everything was kind of couched in perfectionism for me. So getting it right to avoid the rejection, or hitting my deadlines. But you know, I was a procrastinating perfectionist, and everything was kind of under that umbrella between the procrastination and the perfectionism.
Wow. And then adding that layer of RSD, and you know, let's talk about it, because some people listening may know what it is, may experience it, and others may be like, what is RSD? What is RSD?
So rejection sensitivity dysphoria. So I think those are the right words. Basically, the gist of it is because ADHD, first of all, is a condition we're born with. It's brain chemistry. It's not something that develops slowly over time. It's just how our brain processes chemicals, right? So from the moment we are exposed to other children or people in school that don't have ADHD or that have the neurotypical normal, quote unquote, brain chemistry, we feel a little bit different. We feel a little bit, you know, subconsciously, because I don't know that we, you know, we're kids. We don't have the words to say, I've got RSD, right? But you kind of know when you are thinking a little bit differently than the people around you. And that over a lifetime adds up. But RSD in the research and literature that I have read is basically our body's way of adapting to the world that we live in. So criticism feels like a gut punch, like a literal gut punch or lump in my throat, or, you know, someone doesn't like something as much as I thought they would like it. It doesn't even have to be criticism. And I know, like, intellectually, I can tell you, yes, I know that sounds crazy, that I would react so strongly and negatively to a simple, oh, that's all right. On something that I worked really hard on, right? Like, oh, that's all right. Like, I think I assume that a neurotypical person would just take that and be like, oh, okay, well, cool. But for me, that just hits very hard. Like, you don't like me? I equate like, oh, that's all right, or criticism or feedback. Like, it hurts. Like, literally hurts.
Literally.
Literally. And yeah, so you can imagine, to avoid that kind of pain, you overcompensate. You try to make it so, you know, if it's a project or something creatively you're working on, you want to check all boxes proactively to preempt people saying, oh, that's all right. You want to impress, right? Like, oh, that's amazing. And then you feel great, right?
For someone listening who may struggle with that very understanding, that very literal physiological experience, it's important to note that a lot of times we think about our emotions happening in our heads or in our metaphorical hearts, but emotion is a very physiological experience. And, you know, almost anyone can experience. You feel nervous, you're palms might get a little hot and sweaty, or if you're anxious, you might feel butterflies in your stomach, or feeling happy, you might feel like your physical heart is going to burst out of your chest. Those physiological experiences, those very physical experiences of emotions, are very natural to just about every single person. But with RSD, it's more pronounced. And more pronounced usually in what, I'm using air quotes here if you could see me, negative emotions, where the association between feedback or a response to a thing or a behavior feels like feedback or a response to the person. And that's very, very, very real. While I have not experienced it personally, it is important to know that that is very real. RSD is still being studied by all the scientists who are doing this work. And the definition is still in flux, but there's consensus that RSD is a very real physical experience that some people have, including people who have ADHD.
Yeah. And growing up, like, yes, it is. It's very, sorry, my ADHD again, thinking of five things. So threw myself off track there. But yes, it's a very real thing. You described it very well. The only thing I would add to that is the frequency in which it happens. It is a nonstop torrent of rejection. You just see rejection in everything and everywhere. It can drive you crazy. And I think it's probably one of the leading causes of the burnout we'll get to when we talk about my experience a little bit more here. It's a lot to put up with and deal with.
And so like knowing that ADHD is very much a part of you, when you look back at your previous experience and that perfectionism plus procrastination, the physical experience of interpreting rejection, how do you see it now knowing what you know?
A lot of things make a lot more sense now in how I felt so strongly about certain things. So a good example of this in the workplace, it could be something as simple as like a performance evaluation, right? Maybe I expected on a scale of 5, where 3 is good and you get, 4 is great and 5 is like, you did really great, right? If I got a 3 on something, I would be devastated. I would like, even though we say it's, the normal thing, I would like, oh, you don't like me. Like, what did I do wrong? I hit on my goals, but what did I do wrong? So
that is,
and I know a lot of people have that thought about performance reviews, but for someone with RSD, it's actually like a very personal, my boss hates me kind of feeling.
And it's like, it's that connection sounds so pronounced. I remember working with someone a few years ago I was helping her to prepare for interviews, and she was in the middle of a job change. And some of the things that we talked about, actually, let me circle back. She was preparing her for both the sort of job application process and then the interview itself. And I remember how she described the not only the experience of RSD, but the anxiety because of anticipating that experience when even in the middle of an interview, anticipating what getting a no later might be like, or even getting that automated email saying, thank you for applying, you weren't selected. And the way that she described helped me better understand the gut punch, the heartache, and almost like a instinctive reaction to shrink back.
Yeah, the instinct is to take it as you were less than, or you suck. And the anticipation is in everything. So job interviews, I think that's a high stakes example, but even like low stakes things that happen through your daily routines, like having to pick up the phone and call somebody at like a doctor's office or customer service anywhere and have to talk to somebody. Like, I don't like having to have synchronous conversations over the phone or face to face or whatever, because I'm not prepared for that. Like, I can't with an asynchronous conversation and a text message or an email, like I can think about it and I can edit and I can like respond, right? And a large part of that preference is because I can control and edit and rewrite and think about it, right? Whereas in a synchronous conversation, like what comes out of my mouth is heard and final, right? So having to pick up the phone and call somebody, I know this sounds ridiculous. Again, intellectually, I know it sounds ridiculous. I'm an adult. I should be able to pick up the phone and call somebody without having a panic attack, right? Or, in my case, my cheeks flush and I turn red, and it's a great thing to see. But it's the anticipation of, oh, well, they're going to think I'm stupid, or that rejection, making a doctor's appointment, something as simple as that, RSD can rear its head.
Yeah. And I think even people who may have had, I'm thinking of like older millennial, Gen X and older, who maybe they learn about their ADHD at a young age before more was known, and didn't know that their experience with RSD has a name, and it's an experience that other people have. And I think of someone close to me who, when she was really young, she had a hard time speaking up for herself, like, you know, going to the counter to ask for the price of an item or returning something at a store. And it was so, so hard for her.
Mm-hmm.
And yep. Now I think about, I wonder if her experience was RSD, that she had such a hard time, what someone might interpret as, oh, you need to advocate for yourself, you got to speak up. They might completely miss the point that it's not an issue of advocacy or speaking up. It is an issue of experiencing that level of emotional rejection or anticipating that mm-hmm. rejection
oh.
that keeps someone from speaking up.
Yeah, my educated guess is, I, without knowing this person, mm-hmm. yes, absolutely, probably. That's a huge part of it. I say that because I am the same way. And before my diagnosis, it was, oh, I'm just very self-conscious. And self-conscious is a good descriptor. Yes, I am extremely self-conscious, like, of the image I project and the brand that I project. And I tried to control how people perceive me at work as strictly as I could because of that RSD.
That sounds exhausting.
It is exhausting. And, you know, you can only keep it up for so long until, you know, something's got to give, right? And in my case, so I worked at the big company with you mm-hmm. and 17 years, you loved everything that I did. And I think a lot about that. Like, how was I able to stay so long at one place with my brain wiring being the way it is? And I think you and I had the benefit of working in an organization where everything was, it was production support, right? So everything was different day to day. And I mentioned earlier needing like a sense of urgency or fire drills to like key my brain into, oh, this has to be done. And every day was fire drill or something interesting, like a new feature product that's launching, or something broken that's got to be fixed. So the jobs that we were in ticked a lot of the boxes of, you know, novelty or urgency or
yeah. Variety, maybe?
Variety, yeah. Yeah, so until it didn't. Until I reached a role where the upward mobility was a lot more limited and the work was a lot more strategic and more about planning and guiding an organization to a mission, right? And answering to executive leaders in a different way than we had before. And the variety stopped, the novelty stopped. I hit a brick wall in my motivation and literally in my career. Like, I hit, not literally, but I hit a brick wall, and I didn't know it was ADHD at the time. And the only thing I knew that I could do to keep control was just to leave. Mm-hmm. And I think about that a lot. Like, had I known it was ADHD, I would have, like, I don't even know that the brick wall would have been there in the first place, because I would have had the tools to navigate situations a little better.
And I can imagine maybe have made different career choices. A dear friend of mine, he's known for a long time that he is an ADHDer. And he, with this awareness, and he was, I think, in his 20s when he learned about this, with this awareness, he has shaped his career to not even accommodate. It's not an accommodation. It's more like to be in harmony with who he is and how his brain operates and the life that he needs. And he has intentionally pursued roles where he would thrive, In his case, for example, he doesn't do well with specific schedules because he wants to work when he's inspired, motivated, and super focused, and be able to take a beat for a day or two if needed. And so I imagine that how maybe knowing this could have helped to design work accordingly, which work design is a whole other episode that I think we need to do in the future.
Yeah. 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 I think it's all of the above, right? Like looking back, like I probably would have benefited being in a different role, although I loved what I did and I was very good at it until the end.
I mean, yeah. Amazing. I mean, I went to you with all kinds of problems that would go over my head and you would 10 minutes later have a solution.
Again, problem solving checks the boxes, right? Like novelty and fixing other people's problems. Like I'm great at that. But yeah, so I really struggled with, you know, going back to the question, what does reprocessing look like and what did it mean to me? Like I had struggled to understand not only leaving the big company that where we shared experience, but the company after that, you know, I reached a similar brick wall and decided to pursue school and, you know, consulting because, like you said, I control my hours and I'm my own boss. And, you know, there's a whole bunch of reasons that I like doing what I do. But yeah, the reframing, everything kind of helps me understand things a little better.
On the topic of reprocessing, I'm curious, what is it like for you as someone that worked with me to reprocess your memories of us working together once you found out that I had ADHD?
This is something that I've thought a lot about. I've actually thought a lot about this because at the time, and just for context, some of this is in the days of MySpace, so that people understand how far back we're going, right? MySpace, and some of us were still using the BlackBerry Pearl. And at the time, it just seems like you were the person who would, if it needed to take until 2 o'clock in the morning, you would come through and get it done. And that you had the brain for all these, like, the weird issues that other people couldn't grasp. And so I just took it as, well, you know, Andrew's super dedicated and he's super focused and this is just how he works. Looking at it, knowing what we now know, I almost think I see it as almost like this pressure, even though we had such a strong team and an amazing culture, that there's this pressure to almost like meet other people's expectations. I don't mean from a performance review angle, but like other people's expectations. And I almost think that, like, had other people around you known, we probably would have been like, hey, this doesn't have to be done today. Like, yeah, you can sleep and we'll worry about this tomorrow. Tomorrow's another day. So what came across as like the person who can just come in, sharpshooter, solve a problem very quickly and save the day, I now understand as a very different motivation behind that. And I'm grateful for that understanding. There's another piece too, though. Like, there were times that I remember thinking that, like, oh my gosh, Andrew thinks he's smarter than everyone. In hindsight, I now understand this as the effect of masking and masking to prevent the experience of RSD, or at least reduce the impact as much as possible. And it's just so different.
Yeah. One of a couple of the signs of ADHD is like people that, you know, rush to answer other people's questions before they finish their sentences. And I know that can read as condescending, like, oh, I already know what you're going to ask because I already know the answer. And it's not necessarily that I already know the answer. Like I can guess at what your question is going to be just based on context clues, right? And I know that it comes off as rude, condescending, and like you say, like, oh, I think I'm the like smartest person in the room. And it was never my intention to be condescending. I mean, I won't say it's never my intention to be condescending, but let's say it's only for well-deserved cases.
Everyone has that moment.
Right? That's something I still struggle with, you know, even knowing that I have, like, my brain's wired this way and that, like, I gotta, like, anticipate the question. And sometimes I'll blurt out what I think your question's gonna be. And so, yeah. And you hit the nail on the head, like, I think, anyway. It's just trying to be prepared, right? I'm not going to say his name, but caught with your pants down is one of the phrases that one of our coworkers used to say, right? Like, you don't want to be caught with your pants down on something. You've got to be prepared. And that's,
yeah.
So it's interesting that you connected those dots on your own without needing any like reminders. You know what I mean?
It probably helps that, like I said, I shared in one of the articles on our website, recommend you check those out, that neurospiciness was normal to me because so many people in my life, in my home growing up, experienced or knew about their ADHD or different learning disabilities. So to me, that was normal to understand things. But when you don't know what you don't know, as an outsider, the interpretation might be very different than once you know that your colleague is showing up to work and crushing it and also managing through the complexities of being someone living with ADHD in a workplace that intentionally or not is still designed for the neurotypical person.
Yeah, I think that's an important thread to pull because like you say, you, even someone with your sensibilities about neurodivergence and the personal exposure that you had didn't see it right away, right? Like you went straight to, you know, smart aleck or overconfident or overcommitted, right?
No, or like or hyper productive,
right.
Yeah,
right. So even someone with your sensibilities around the topic didn't necessarily put the dots together until like out of the blue one day, like, hey, oh my gosh, I got ADHD, right? And then you start reprocessing your own memories. So on the topic of reprocessing, a diagnosis doesn't hit just you as the person being diagnosed. It hits your friends, colleagues, family members, like, you know, everybody gets a chance to kind of see you in a different light. And I'm interested what that means about managing people in the workplace or working with coworkers and how we shape that.
And that itself could probably be three different episodes that we can talk about.
Well, thanks for sharing that and sharing that perspective. If you think you have ADHD and you are seeking a diagnosis or not, even if you because I was kind of convinced that I had it based on the social media posts and everything that I was seeing. But still, it was a shock. And still, my brain reprocessed everything. Just hearing that diagnosis from the doctor opened the floodgates. It was like a tidal wave. The biggest piece of advice that I think I could give anybody is give yourself grace. Your diagnosis is going to reframe how you handle things in the future, what you do right now, and how you think about things in your past. And you're going to see things that in a new light that maybe you might feel guilty about or ashamed of, or, you know, some things I might, oh my God, I did that. What a dummy. Right. But give yourself, you know, a little grace and realize that you did the best you could with what you knew at the time. And you have the hindsight now, but you didn't at the time. Right. So even though you're seeing things in a whole new light doesn't mean that you were wrong then. You just weren't equipped with all the information.
Yeah. I imagine it's context and being able to name the experience and knowing that there are potentially, in the case of ADHD, About 20% of the population may experience this, and many might think that they are alone in the process. And I'm so glad that you said grace, because it is anything related to people, I believe, requires grace. But something that comes up related to grace is self-compassion. And if anyone is wrestling with this right now, wondering about your neurospiciness and reprocessing your previous experience, I would like to invite you to check out the work of Dr. Kristen Neff. She founded the Self-Compassion Institute. And on her website, selfcompassion.org, really self-compassion.org, and it'll be in the show notes, she has tons of resources for self-compassion breaks that you can take on your own. And they're not super heavy. I'm talking about 4 minutes, 5 minutes, 6 minutes that can help you extend compassion and grace to yourself as you're walking through the process of diagnosis or reinterpreting, reframing, however that looks like for you.
Awesome.
And with that, as we wrap up this episode, thank you so much for joining us. We hope that you keep being you, different at work.
Hi, one final note. We are not mental health professionals, and nothing you hear on this podcast is meant to replace therapy, diagnosis, or professional care. We are just two people sharing what we've lived and learned. If today's episode brought something up for you, or you're just looking for support, visit our website at differentatwork.com for additional resources. Again, that's differentatwork.com. Just click the resources tab. Goodbye.